welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Matt Enders, Tony Bemis, and Mary Tomich.
This is episode 68, Untitled.
I wanted to call it Fed Up.
But she was outvoted for Untitled.
I was outvoted, so I lost.
That's right. We can't have two Fedora-related titles in a week in a row.
I know. As I said earlier, I was thinking of going back and changing the fan Fedora-tastic, because as it turns out, it wasn't as...
Yeah, well, no, it depends on who you listen to. Alan Cox made the now infamous posting about how horrible Fedora 18 was, but if you read a lot of the comments, at least 50% of the people are saying, I don't have any problems with it. Fine for me, so.
Everything I heard, that the installer was still screwed up.
Yeah, like there's a problem with the partitioning part of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised that, I mean, with all the
Anaconda,
delays, they still.
So,
yeah.
Anaconda's like proven technology. They must have done a big rewrite on it.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's what held them up, right? Well, that's why there wasn't a release
for a long
time.
I thought it was that they were trying to get,
what held them up.
I thought it was that they were trying to get UEFI incorporated.
Oh, well, that would make sense too, simply because they've been pretty active on that front. So, all right, well, so I know, Matt, when we hear what you did last week, one of the things is that you didn't upgrade yet, right?
I did not, no.
Okay.
I did not upgrade yet.
Okay.
So,
what else did you do?
What else did I do? Let's see. It was a short week at work, so that was a good thing.
What's a short week mean? Four days, three days?
3 days.
3 days. That is great. Yeah. 3 12-hours?
3 12-hours. But then when I have to work the 4 12-hours, it gets kind of long.
Yeah. That week you only get 3 days off then. Yeah, I'm going to whine about that.
Actually, I made the suggestion at work that I should go to a 5-day-a-week 8-hour. And
that's a novel schedule.
It is a novel schedule. And be from 10 at night to 6 in the morning.
Are they going to do that?
But no.
No.
Oh, they're not going to do it?
No. He wants to bring on another guy to get the night guys some help. But I don't know that the big boss is going to go for bringing on another guy. So I didn't want to work nights, but the two night guys need some help. They're just overwhelmed a lot of the time.
Right.
And because there's only ever one of them there. And in the daytime, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it just sounds to me that all you do there is just rack servers.
Yeah, we're pretty busy. Especially we got our Australia gig going out now. Mm-hmm. We 36 servers, a backup server, 4 switches, and a firewall, all staged to go out to Australia.
How much of that do you guys do ahead of time before shipping out everything?
The only thing we did ahead of time was kickstart the backup server so that all we got to do is go it once it's there. And we set the DRAC cards on the servers. So that even if they're powered off, we can get into them.
Oh, cool.
So.
Great.
That was my week.
All right. So, Tony, you told us earlier you were busy. So what part of that busy was... tech-related.
I was working on this Mac. I worked on it all week. I got audio working. I had installed...
What was the problem with the audio?
I'm not sure. I plugged in...
It was on mute?
I have the Sound Blaster. No. I plugged in the Sound Blaster, and then I installed a Pulse Audio, and then it started working.
Really?
Yeah.
God, Pulse Audio.
I've never had a problem with Pulse Audio.
Well, when it first came out, there were
a lot of problems with it. But lately, I've not had, but people still bitch about it.
I think it's because they're used to bitching about it.
Yeah, just
residual. They haven't gotten out of that mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Notice that I'm shifting, though, because I think that it allows you to change the audio
independently
for various
applications. Yeah, that's what I like the most.
So if I have 3 things going at once, I can always turn 2 of them down so they're in the background and then hear the others.
Exactly.
Why don't you have 3 things playing?
Don't ask, man. Don't ask.
Well, I don't know about you, Mary, but I would. You could have a podcast playing, and you could be on a website. And then you could have a porn playing in the background. Just turn mute that one.
Did you say porn?
Yeah, well, yes, you do know about me. I would not.
Yeah,
because
you don't need the volume on a porn. It's the visual.
I don't believe that my configuration would have that setup. But, yeah, I mean, if I'm listening to maybe a tutorial on something and I'm doing something else and then there's a podcast or something in the background. Yeah, so it is kind of nice that you can.
When my porn comes up, it is on permanent mute. So.
All right. Well, what else else did you do, Tony? Shifting.
So getting back to the Mac here, I got the audio working. I had to install a bunch of dev files to or packages to be able to compile, but the streaming server.
What compiler? Just the regular.
Well, GCC, but then there was a couple other dependencies it needed.
Okay.
And I could never get it to work, so I switched over to Black Ice. I got it compiling, and that was Friday night. Well, Saturday morning I had a revelation. It's like, why am I trying to use these separate computers when I already have one doing the Google Hangout, and I can just stream it all from that one computer?
I don't know, Tony. Why were you trying to use these different computers?
I don't know. So I think I'm going to abandon that project and just put it on my main computer that I'm doing the Google streaming from, my desktop.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it'll simplify it for you, so that's good.
And then Friday after work, I went to the auto show, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, when did I go? I went Tuesday.
My favorite car
Wednesday
was the Tesla. The Tesla car, the all-electric. That was
awesome. Have you ever seen video of that car?
Yeah.
Its offline torque is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Because
it's an electric motor. It's an electric motor, and then bang, it's right there.
Yeah.
Very fast. And have you seen the batteries? No, I didn't see it this year, but I think last year or the year before when I saw it, the batteries are kind of a thin.
Is it now?
I believe it's like a thin.
I saw the first generation, like the breakdown of how it all works. No, but it runs the entire length of the car, like where the normal drivetrain would be.
Yeah.
In the center of the car, the batteries run that whole length. And, but I think it's really cool. And the new car, the handles, whenever it's either locked or when you're driving, they suck in. So it's streamlined, the handles on the doors.
So when you're doing 70 legally on the freeway, it'll just cut the slipstream will be a lot more smooth.
That 70.
And it's a,
for those of you only listening, there were air quotes around the 70.
And it's a seven seater.
A seven seater.
Yeah, it's a five seater normal, like a
two in the front, three in the back.
Yeah, and two people in the trunk,
and then two in the trunk, backwards seat.
Two in the two bodies or two people.
Yeah, two people can sit in the back facing backwards, and
are they kind of
reclined? When two kids sat in there, it looked fine. Two adults sat in there,
they couldn't shut the lid. That's
right.
Exactly what I was thinking. Oh, so it's like carrying your kids like bags of groceries in the trunk.
Right.
All right, well, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so that was a really cool car. And then I spent a lot of time in the Ford area because they have a 1 liter engine, 3 liter, or 3-cylinder 1 liter engine that gets over 100 horsepower.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that a concept car?
No, that's an engine they're putting in the Fiestas starting this year. Or no, he said.
The Fiestas or Festivas?
Festiva. Yeah, starting this year, or the 2014 model. So that's pretty cool. And,
yeah, cause those new CAFE standards take effect, 2014?
I think so. Yeah. So, I mean, but I walked the whole place and a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah,
I went to the auto show once a few years ago with a friend of mine from Cleveland, and I have no interest in ever going back.
Well, if you're not into cars.
Not into cars.
All right. Well, no. I'm sure that's probably, anyway.
I was going to invite Mary to go with me because I went by myself on Friday. And,
when did you go?
I realized you, went,
in the evening?
I was there, yeah, I was there about.
Should have called me.
6 o'clock or something.
No, you should have called me. I mean, because I don't live that far from it.
Yeah.
You know, a few miles.
Well, I figured you had already gone, but.
I could go again.
Okay.
It'd be kind of fun
because
we
know all the highlights.
Like the Stingray.
Yeah.
All right, so.
I went by the Camaro. Exhibit.
Yeah.
Did you see? They have a Hot Wheels thing. You can wait in line and you hit the button and you can race. There's two Hot Wheels that come down, does a loop and it does a ramp. And then, so you get to hit the button and then you can walk over and they give you a Hot Wheels.
Ooh.
So I have the Camaro Hot Wheels.
You have to wait in line for that?
Yeah. I think I waited 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Actually, for Friday night, it wasn't that crowded. I expected it to be pretty bad. But today, Sunday, the last day of the show, is the worst.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think we went last year. I'd never go again.
Mm-hmm. So
what'd you do, Mary?
Well, you know, I went to the auto show too. But I, you remember last week we talked about the Raspberry Pi and, how I got that. Thank you very much again for the swap, because we swapped. You got my Raspberry Pi and
yeah.
I got a nice little card with the OS on it for the media center. I ordered my Pi. I got it. And yeah. I got a case with it too this time. They had, got a nice little red case. It's kind of a translucent case and you,
That encloses it and lets you use the Pi while it's...
Yeah. Yep.
No kidding.
Yeah.
They cool. said they weren't like, ever going to do that, I thought.
Well, it's, I got it from, Newark.
Oh, you, well, Newark. You didn't come with it.
Yeah, it didn't come with it.
Okay.
But it was like $6 or $7. I mean, it was not very expensive at all, so.
Cool.
Yeah. When I called them, because they had to ship it separately, I discovered I had accidentally ordered the white one, and I freaked out, and I thought, I don't want any white computer equipment in my house. So I called them, and they, because it was on back order, apparently a lot of other people do, they're able to change my order on the fly, and I got a red one, so I kind of like that.
All right.
So, yeah. So that was.
Did you hook it up?
Not yet. I got it in the case, though. I just, you know, my question for you, when you're putting that together, now, you know, obviously all I need to supply then, in addition to the monitor and the, you know, the input method, is just an external drive with all my media on it, right?
Right. Or if you do it across the network.
Hook it up to your
That's
network.
That's what, I okay. have a Samba share on my
yeah.
computer down here.
Okay. I wanted to find out exactly how you did that.
Yeah.
So it's a Samba share.
Yeah, XBMC has a way you can go across the network, like five different methods. NSF mm-hmm. or NFS.
And that's Samba 4?
Samba and...
No.
Okay. Well, it's Samba just a Samba 4. Client, so
oh, okay.
it can connect.
To oh, anything. Okay.
There's no... Samba 4 doesn't have a real file share in it yet.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Matt. I didn't You're know welcome. That. All right. The other thing, too, is I tried to use... I tried to transfer the contents of my, one of my legally purchased DVDs. All of my DVDs are legally purchased. I want to preface my comment with that because I want to put it, you know, where it's more easily accessible to me.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I had difficulty just taking the contents off the DVD and putting it onto a drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll catch up with you later about how to maybe do that.
But. Yeah, there's a couple different ways that you can back up your own DVDs.
Mm-hmm. One easiest way is just to make an ISO file of it.
That doesn't necessarily do it because it's
really?
the drive's encrypted, and the only way I think you have to read it at 1x off if you're gonna do just a straight. So I'm not sure DVD and DD whether you can tell it to read at 1x, but then that's gonna take you 3-4 hours to make a copy of it. So
okay,
we'll see.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, that's kind of about it for me this week. Other than the normal stuff, you know.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
We have a release candidate on Friday, the 25th of January, 2013, at 1534 Pacific Standard Time. Linus Torvalds released Colonel 3.8-RC5, and this is what he had to say about it. And this is from Google+, not the LKML list, because I couldn't find it on the LKML list through LWN or anything, so I'm thinking he never announced it there. I'll be traveling for LCA next week, so I'm hoping things are quieting down. They did not quiet down much for RC5, though we still had 300-plus commits in this RC. Not that they look all that scary, but there's more movement in ButterFS, F2FS, ptrace, and module loading than I'd really prefer at this stage. Sure, there's also the usual driver updates, I915 and Radeon, USB, serial, yada yada. But the drivers actually accounted for less than half of the patch this time around. Go forth and test. So the mainline is still 3.7. Our stable updates were on Monday, the 21st of January, 2013, at 11:54 Pacific Standard Time. That's 11:54 and 20 seconds Pacific Standard Time.
Greg Thanks for the clarification.
It's required. In a second, you'll see.
Okay.
Greg Crowe-Hartman released Colonel 3.7.4 with 40 files changed, 341 lines inserted, and 84 lines deleted. Then on Monday, January 20, you mark that time. 3, 2, 1. Then on Monday, January 21st. 2013 at 11:54 and 56 seconds Pacific Standard Time, Greg Crowe-Hartman released Colonel 3.4.27 with 28 files changed, 256 lines inserted, and 69 lines deleted. On Monday, the 21st of January, 2013, at 11:56 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kruhartman released kernel 3.0.60, with 20 files changed, 226 lines inserted, and 60 lines deleted. And our kernel developer quote this week also comes from Greg Kruhartman, where he's praising a developer. This is a first-time submitter, and he did everything perfectly. And Greg said, I only have part of the quote here, part of the thing here, yeah. Not all of it. And he said in the thing that we really bust on people's chops when they screw shit up, so we got to point out when they do stuff right. So this first-time submitter did it right. So,
I'm sure he was probably a little nervous after seeing that last
yeah.
comment.
Yeah. So here was a totally new developer sending in perfect patches and even revisions of the original patch after feedback and getting accepted in just over 24 hours total. I don't think it really gets easier than that from both my end as a maintainer and hopefully from the developer end either. The kernel development process works really well. No tools, more than just an email client and an editor needed. Very low barrier to entry, which is good. And the developer he's talking about's name is Franz Claver from xsens.com.
So, cool.
All right.
Congratulations, Franz. Good job.
Yeah, I got the thumbs up from,
yep, from Greg Kruhartman.
Yeah.
So that's the kernel news this week.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
Yeah, we got a couple this week. It's kind of a short list. But on the 21st, we have Snow Linux 4, the XFCE, and E17 edition. And I heard the Linux Action Show, they were talking about one of the distros, but using E17.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really talking it up. It looked pretty cool. So I think that'd be fun to try out sometime.
Yeah, it took them a long time.
Enlightenment's been around for.
I was going to say, and it took them a long time to put.
I mean, it started out as a Unix window manager, didn't it?
I'm not sure.
That sounds familiar.
I think it did.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah. And then going on the 23rd, we have Backbox Linux 3.0.1. Or, I'm sorry, 3.0.1. And that's the updated version. It's Ubuntu-based live DVD for penetration testing, instant response, and computer forensics. It's pretty cool. That's very similar to a couple other things that are out there. But so I'm not sure what the difference between this and the other ones are.
The fact that it came second?
It came second, yeah. I'm drawing a blank. What's the other one called?
He's barely drawing a blank, too.
I used to run it. It's Black? No. Backtrace.
Backtrace, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, okay. And then going on, we have, also on the 23rd, we have Netrunner 12.12.1. And they're KDE-based with KDE 9, or 4.9.4.
Yeah.
That's not even the newest KDE.
I was just going to, when I took a look at that, I went down to their site just to kind of look around. And
like Fedora has a newer KDE.
Yeah,
Fedora 17.
4.9.5 is the... So they must have frozen that release before. Well, I'm trying to remember when 4.9.5 was released. It was a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened. They had a feature freeze or something, or they just kind of,
and then they
do their bug. However,
it is based on Kubuntu 12.10. So I'm not sure if, because 12.10 has that.
Netrunner is supposed to like be totally up on the KDE there.
Hmm.
Supposed to be right in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. Okay, and we've got, what else?
Then we have Descent OS 3.0.2, which is a Ubuntu-based system with Mate as the environment.
Mate.
Mate, but anyway. Yeah, and you know, the Descent, the maintainer of Descent, he's a 21 or 22-year-old student.
Oh, yeah, Brian Manderville?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, so I always think it's kind of interesting when you have somebody who's, you know, in school, they've got something like this out. But then I think the only concern I would have, if I was trying to run this as an everyday one, is the longevity, because when you've got a team of people, and maybe he's got a few other folks working with him on this, but anyway, so and this will come into play in just a few moments.
Okay.
So all go right. ahead, Tony.
And then rounding out at the end, we have Systems Rescue CD 3.3.0, which is there. That's a strictly text or CLI based like rescue CDs and tools.
Right, right. Kind of like Trinity, but not as good.
Right. It's cool though. I don't think it has a whole like menu system that Trinity does. I think that's a big difference. But that's it for the distros.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
We have Snow Linux with 1627.
And trending up.
And number four, we have Ubuntu with 1939.
And trending up.
Number three is Fedora with 1942.
And trending down.
That was quick.
Number two is Magia with 2363.
And trending up.
And in number one is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3470.
And trending down.
All right.
Hey.
Mary, what's on SDA 6 this week?
Is it SDA 6 this week?
No, it was virtual. It was right. Virtual machine. So what's in my virtual machine here this week? But this week's review, well, first of all, if you've got a friend or family member whom you'd like to move from the Windows world to Linux, you know, you want that transition to be as smooth and as transparent as possible. So, okay, Slackware's out. they can try Mint, Xorin. There's a number of distros that they can try for that. And this week, what I've done is I've taken a slightly different route as far as my reviews, and I'm going to review a less known distro. Well, actually, no, that's the same thing I usually do is less known distros. But it also claims to be, at least according to the site, a Windows-friendly system that everyone can use. Now, the definition of Windows-friendly, I don't know about you guys, but for me, distro touts itself as being Windows friendly, it should have a couple of parameters. It should meet a couple of parameters. One of those is that the desktop should be organized in the familiar Windows way. The tools with which users are familiar should be easily available.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to install a program simply by double clicking on it.
Yeah. Easily available and in menus that make sense.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. And it should be easy to update the installed OS. So let's see how Color Wheel's chroma key measures up. Now, for those of you who don't know what a chroma key is, you guys know what it
is?
Yes,
I know what a chroma
key is. Okay. A chroma key is, it's a particular color that you, you know, when you're doing green screening.
Oh, okay.
That you want to remove, so you do everything in front of a green screen and then.
Then you can remove that color.
Yeah, to make sure that it's working.
Yep.
Right. All right, cool.
You just pull it out, so. And that's because I was looking at Kaden Live tutorials because I set up a small green screen in my basement. I'm going to get bigger with it and do some experimenting.
Yeah,
so.
It's got to be that really funky color green
so that
you don't accidentally get.
Yes.
So it doesn't, because nobody would ever use something that color.
Right.
It's that hideous fluorescent green. So, all right. Well, first the vitals. The name, of course, is Color Wheel Linux, and I've got a link to it in the show notes. The maintainer. You know, I couldn't determine the name of the maintainer, but apparently he's a 15-year-old. Now, when I found that out, I thought, it's not that it's a bad thing that it's this person is so young, but I just thought I wanted to get something that was, you know, maybe along a different line. But that's all right. I decided, you know, I'm going with it. The distro's latest birthday, 1.1.1, was released, I think within the last month. And it's a derivative of Xubuntu 12.04, and it uses the 3.2.0 kernel. And, of course, the review desktop is XFCE. Now, one thing is interesting about this particular project, they offer a $3.95 a month, no contract, support method.
Oh, yeah?
And yeah, you can, it's a, they will issue you an official company ID for each customer, and you get 3 tickets per month for direct phone assistance. Now, you can tell that guy is kind of young and doesn't realize how much time that could take. Or you can opt for the $39.95 per year. I thought that was pretty cheap, and I thought for people coming over from Windows, that's a nice way for them to fix anything that kind of is confusing to them.
Yeah.
Now, the live environment does have a Windows-like look to it. There's a single panel at the bottom with icons for several common tasks, browsing, playing and playing music, that type of thing. But there were 2 other icons, a shell terminal and GIMP, which puzzled me. A much better choice would have been a PDF reader and a mail client for the transitioning Windows user. Another puzzling panel that was resident on the desktop was the desktop switcher. It showed 2 desktops. Why include this panel or this tool on a panel for a Windows-friendly distro? If a newbie accidentally switches desktops, the programs they're using will essentially disappear, and if they don't realize what they've done, it's going to be disconcerting and confusing. Now, Color Wheel does a fairly good job of handling display graphics, although I was unable to get my older laptop to boot it. And that, Tony, that's the one I got from you to call Old Nelly.
Oh, yeah.
I was unable to get Old Nelly booted with it. I don't know why, but my Zerizon laptop had no problem with the live boot. Graphics were handled with Nouveau and with the IWL 4965. Now, by default, Color Wheel Linux uses Firefox and Chrome for its browser. Its Office suite is LibreOffice 3.5.4.2. Mail client is Thunderbird. And then the default file manager is Thunar, of course. And I did install it, as I said, in a virtual machine. And not surprisingly, Color Wheel Linux uses a standard Ubuntu install. Not much more to say there. Again, it was relatively straightforward. Let's see here. Oh, yes. You know, on the site, Color Wheel touts that Wine 1.5. And this is where it gets very kludgy and where I really ding them. Because it touts that Wine 1.5 is pre-installed and according to the distro site is constantly updated. Now, the Color Wheel site implies that it's easy to install common window programs. Simply open the Windows .exe file the way you do on Windows, just point and click. So, you know, double click and it should walk you through a wizard. Boom, you're installed. That's my expectation when I did this. So one of my parameters, of course, is to test this. The first task was to load and install a program, and the program I randomly chose was UrfanView. It's a graphic file viewer. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but
no.
It handles any kind of practically any kind of graphic file, from TIFFs to JPEGs.
InfraView.
UrfanView.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
IFR.
It looks like a little Splatcat or something, you know. It's
right,
red.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That one. So I downloaded it from CNET.com and saved it, just like you would if you were a Windows user. Now, of course, let's see here. In the Windows world, you typically will install it by double-clicking. Now, the so-called, after downloading the .exe file, I double-clicked it, which should have started the install process via Wine. However, this did not happen. Instead, my double-click literally opened the .exe file so I could see what was inside it. Now, a new user would have been completely confused by this point. But it was kind of interesting to just be able to open it up and take a look at what was inside there. Again, there were a couple of files and some other things. But again, a new user, that's not going to work for them at all. So that was a little disappointing. But here's the other thing. Color Wheel comes with Wine Tricks. Are you familiar with Wine Tricks?
No.
Okay.
I've never used Wine.
Okay. Well, at least not to your knowledge, right?
You've
drunk it.
I've drunk Wine. I've never used Wine,
okay.
The software.
All right. But Wine Tricks is a script to download and install various redistributable runtime libraries. I can only say that once, that one word. needed to run some of the programs in Wine. Now, coincidentally, UrfanView was listed, so I selected it and discovered it was available only as a manual install. Well, I just did that, so let's see what happens when I take it through Wine Tricks. So despite a wizard being available for this process, I was still unable to complete the install of the program. Because what it did is it gave me a little error message, and then it took me out to the site, a download site, which I downloaded. I was then supposed to place it, and here's the funny part. I was supposed to place it in a hidden directory, for Wine Tricks. But it's not clear to a user, and if they don't have their hidden files on, they're not going to see it.
Right,
and I'm
dot.
Thinking to myself, this is a major fail in my opinion. A major fail. But anyway, so I was still unable to install it. It was a problem. Now, new users should be able to follow update instructions. Now, the update instructions here are straightforward. They're very Ubuntu-like, of course. You're alerted to an issue via a little red icon in the system tray with a white exclamation point on it. So, yep, you click it, and you basically will have an option of updating or installing your updates, those kinds of options. And I'll have some screenshots in the show notes. So, the first thing it does is it'll update, updates the cache or the basic programs that you've got, your packages that you've got in your cache, your app cache or whatever that's called. And then it lets you know that software updates are available. And then you can go ahead and just click through the process. So that's not too bad. I think users coming from Windows can handle that if they're reasonably intelligent. Or not too intelligent.
I think that's a big qualifier, Mary.
Yeah. Well, it's the install thing that was hugely a mess. I mean, that was a mess. But anyway, on to some interesting programs. And there were a few here that kind of caught my eye. Have you guys ever heard of Catfish?
I think so, but I've not.
Not on a fryer.
Not as a program. I've heard of it in a different context this week, but we can talk about that later. Go ahead. Catfishing.
Oh, I don't. You mean you talking about fishing?
No, that Monteo or that where somebody poses as somebody else,
right.
Anyways.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that. But anyway, what Catfish does is it's a way to search your your desktop and for files. So you have the option of using a number of different file tools as part of that, and. What's really nice about that is it's all just done graphically. So you can certainly go to the command line, but it provides a way to do that graphically. And I think for new users, that's helpful. So I did install Catfish, and I tried to use it once. It was taking too long, and I just moved on. But anyway, so that was one program that I thought was kind of interesting and maybe bared further looking into by anyone who's interested in it. Next one is Twinkle. It's a SIP phone for Linux. I've got a link to it in the show notes so that you can make IP calls. It requires having an account or getting an account set up, and they give you some options for doing that. The next program I thought was interesting for a couple of reasons, and it's Simple Scan. Now, it's interesting because it's in this distro, but what was really, what I really liked about it is I had a chance to use it earlier in the week. I had to, there were some documents that had to be faxed. I didn't have access to a fax machine, so what I was able to do is to take these hard copy documents, and using Simple Scan, I was able to scan them in, make a multi-page PDF of them without any issues whatsoever, save it, and then email it. It was a piece of cake, and it's called Simple Scan, and it's in the Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Debian repositories, and it's just put a dash between the two terms. And
yeah.
Install it. Yeah, I found it to be really, really helpful.
That's cool.
Yeah. I've got a link to it on the, in the show notes too, because they've got a little article about quick and dirty scanning. Quick and dirty as far as, you know, just doing it
fast.
On the fly.
Yeah.
Okay, the, Onboard is a nice 3D keyboard. I opened up LibreOffice, typed in a few characters, using that little on-screen keyboard, it worked perfectly. Very nice little keyboard. Also, they've got a media player called Parole, which I've never heard of.
Parole?
Yeah, Parole. I know. That kind of caught my eye. Caught my eye for a number of reasons, because Kwame Kilpatrick, former Detroit mayor, is in jail. He's in jail this weekend for parole, 14 parole violations.
Yeah.
But he's on trial for federal corruption charges. So that dude's in a lot of trouble. So,
going down.
So when I saw Parole, I just kind of, oh, let's take a look at this. And then it also had, oddly enough, Remaster Sys on here. So I thought, well, you know, for a new Linux user, they're not going to really know what's going on with that. So a little odd. But anyway, my rating. Now, the four criteria I mentioned, easy to install, not bad. You know, easy to install the distro and
right,
updates
right.
is not bad.
Right.
Easy to install programs, fail. Yeah, tools, the tools for users, most of them are pretty good. I think a user would not have a difficult time with
and
it.
See, the problem I have, were they easy to find in the directory tree?
Yeah, for the most part, yes. For the most part, yes. But then the desktop should be organized. It was for the most part, but then they had they had the shell terminal there, which I think for a new user might confuse them. They had the desktop switcher. They had GIMP. Now,
right. Well,
GIMP is
they shouldn't have installed GIMP. They should have installed Pinta instead.
Yes,
because it's a much mm-hmm. easier to use program.
Exactly.
The shell, I disagree with. It should be there just so that the new user can be exposed to it and experiment with it.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point.
The desktop switcher, I have to agree with you.
Get it out of there.
Yeah,
yep.
I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I gave Color Wheel Linux. I gave it a 2.3. Because
2.3.
Yeah, well,
not that bad. Not as bad as I expected.
Yeah, well, again, I gave it a 2.3 because they did some stuff fairly well, but the big fail
was that integration with Wine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough thing to get integrated with. My daughter once spent 8 hours on the command line trying to get iTunes to work in Wine, and she finally did get iTunes to work in Wine. But she couldn't get it to sync with her iPod.
Oh.
So.
Wow. Yeah. So anyway, so that's Color Wheel Linux. That whole review will be in the show notes. So
all right,
thank
cool.
you very much for allowing me to share that.
Yeah.
Gentlemen.
All right. So what do we got next there?
Do we have some news this week?
I think
news,
we do have
we
some
got
news
conventions
this week.
Too.
But first I want to go back to this InfraN viewer. You are correct. I looked it up and I always move that in. It's IRFAN view.
Mm-hmm. IRFAN
view. IRFAN viewer. And I always move that in to be infra. I don't know why. I just always did.
Yeah.
And that's the way I always said it in my head was infra view. But it's not.
Yeah, it is. It's IRFAN view. Yeah, because we use it at work when I worked at this other place, and it's again a great little image viewer.
Yeah.
If you're in the Windows
only,
world.
Windows only.
Yeah, if you're in the Windows world, it's great.
Linux can already view any video.
Linux puts all that to shame
right.
with its capabilities.
So, all right.
Agreed. So.
Yeah.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First up, we have the next long-term kernel support is 3.4. The LTSI, the Long-Term Support Initiative, says the 3.4 kernel will be maintained for 2 years while backporting some of the features of the newer Linux kernel releases. Some of the major manufacturers are backing this new long-term kernel, like Hitachi, Sony, and LG. The new long-term kernel is based on 3.4.25. Some of the backported features from newer kernels include the Contiguous Memory Allocator, CMA, the AFBUS as a kernel-based implementation of the DBUS protocol delay, CODEL, for optimizing TCP/IP network buffer control and platform-specific board support. The boards that are supported include the Armadillo 800, the 1891, the KZM9D, the KZM9G, and the Marzen. Yes, Mary?
What's
riveted at the edge of my seat. I'm just giving you a hard time.
All right. And moving on, the next story is we have Microsoft sits on a study showing how Munich would have saved money by sticking with Microsoft. Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard aren't talking. They conducted a study that supposedly shows Munich had their numbers wrong. The data from the report was leaked to a German publication that then printed the information. Munich says that switching to their own distribution saved them over 11 million euros, which is $14.3 million. Microsoft commissioned HP to conduct a TCO, a total cost of ownership study. This study supposedly claims that Munich would have actually saved 43.7 million euros if they had stayed with Microsoft. Turns out HP's study compared Munich sticking with XP and Office 2003. That, however, is not sustainable, as Microsoft is discontinuing support for XP next year. In conclusion, I agree with Roy Isley, principal analyst at Ovum, and Karl-Heinz Schneider, head of Munich's municipal IT service. HP and the Microsoft study is skewed, and does not take into account the facts of Microsoft product discontinuation and licensing costs, which the HP study did not take into account.
Really?
Licensing costs, which were not included in the study.
Oh.
How could you do a study like that and not include the licensing costs?
Yeah, no. So it would be even higher than the $43 million? Is that what you're talking about?
No. The 43 number is inflated because they didn't take them to account licensing.
Maybe
costs.
They were trying to do an apples to apples, no pun intended, yeah. Comparison and not include licensing because Linux.
But they have to include licensing because Microsoft I know,
but
licensing.
But they're probably and I understand that, but I'm trying to make a joke.
Oh,
you know, as far as Linux, what are your licensing costs for Linux? Nothing, so Microsoft said, well, then we're not going to include ours either.
They wrote their own distribution. Yeah. They're doing the support and everything in house. They've totally wrote their own distribution.
That's crazy.
Moving on, Puppet Labs gets $30 million infusion from VMware.
Wow.
Puppet, which is open source, has emerged as the de facto tool for enterprise systems configuration management. Luck Kane, CEO of Puppet Labs, said, "We are talking to some investors, and VMware said, we'd love to have a closer relationship." So because of that conversation, VMware is not only investing in Puppet Labs, they are also entering into a commercial agreement to develop, market, and sell products. Keynes went on to emphasize that this new deal will not change Puppet Labs' product roadmap. We'll still build the same technology, but we'll have people dedicated to make sure the products, VMware, and Puppet work well together in general. This next one's for Tony. Cinnamon may replace GNOME 3 in Fedora 19.
Ooh, that's cool.
The GNOME devs have lobbied hard to keep GNOME 3 as the default desktop. That all may be for naught, as there has now been a proposal to bring Cinnamon as the default desktop.
Shouldn't they fix their installer first?
GNOME 3 is just not usable as a production desktop, and the GNOME devs just won't face that fact. If they lose Fedora, arguably their biggest distro, it may force the devs to reconsider. This is what Eric Smith, the one who made the proposal, had to say. The GNOME 3 interface is substantially different than the traditional desktop interfaces on both Linux and Windows. While it is good that there is research into new user interface concepts, many users prefer to have a traditional interface that they are accustomed to. I'm not trying to start or continue a flame war here, so I won't state any of my own criticisms of GNOME Shell here, but I will observe that a number of very high-profile people in the Linux community, such as Linus Torvalds and Alan Cox, have publicly announced that due to problems with GNOME Shell, they are switching to a different desktop environment and or Linux distribution. We'll see what happens in May.
Cool.
Next up, Stallman and the FSF F up another open source project.
Nice.
The FSF has these project called High Priority. High Priority.
The project is called that? Or
No, it's a list of products.
Okay.
Categorized as high priority.
Okay.
Notice the air quotes, those of you just listening,
yeah,
that I'm air quoting high priority, which will become evident why shortly. Well, recently several developers walked away from projects that they had been involved with for a very long time because of falling out with the FSF and Stallman. Well, Stallman has done it again. An FSF high priority project.
More air quotes.
Yeah. The GNU Libre DWG, a C library for handling DWG files. The DWG file format is the native format for popular CAD software like AutoCAD and IntelliCAD, with the backing of Autodesk, Open Design Alliance, and other industry leaders. There has not been a code to... I messed something up here.
I think my brain
got ahead of my fingers.
Okay.
Because it's not... The sentence isn't complete the way it reads. It's,
well, just add...
It says, there has not been a code to Libre DWG in 2 years, should say code commit.
Oh, okay.
To Libre DWG, with the last commit coming in January of 2011.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, this high priority has not been an official release yet, but that is not the big problem at the moment. There's this popular open source program called LibreCAD. It runs on Linux, Windows, and Mac OS X. They are seeking to add DWG support via the Libre DWG library. So a popular open source program wants to use Libre DWG. You would think this would be good, right? Well, not if you're the SFF. FSF. LibreCAD is GPLv2 licensed, and Libre DWG is, however, GPLv3, which is not compatible with GPLv2. When the FSF was contacted about relicensing the Libre DWG library so it could be used with LibreCAD, their answer was, no. LibreCAD isn't the only one. There is also FreeCAD, an open-source 3D CAD modeler. Both LibreCAD and FreeCAD have patches available to support the DWG library, but they are prohibited from integrating them. They have dependencies on the popular GPLv2 license, while the Free Software Foundation will only allow Libre DWG to be licensed for GPLv3, not GPLv2.
Wow.
Let's look at the situation. GitMaster on the Libre DWG code hasn't been touched in 2 years. There are two open source projects that want to use this code that the FSF calls a high priority, yet they are unwilling to make a small license change. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. GPLv3 is bad for business. Stallman needs to just go away, and the FSF needs a fundamental shift. So there's a little opinion in there, and there's a lot of fact in there.
So you had one foot on your soapbox. And
yeah. But, all right. But it's just a bad situation. Yeah. In recent months, we've seen those two other projects suffer greatly. One, the two developers involved with the project, two whole developers are involved with the project. It's a hugely popular project, walked away because they couldn't deal with the FSF anymore.
Oh, wow.
So now there's no developers on the project.
Great.
You know, it's just, there needs to be some fixing going on. And part of that fixing is Stallman out. Sorry. Back to the news. Ford goes open source with Control Computer.
Ooh.
Ford has released an open source hardware and software toolkit called OpenXC. This toolkit will let you write apps for your car's computer. The first of these apps are probably only going to add things like internet radio. These are sure to be followed by apps that tweak your performance. There is going to be a Ford...
that tweak your car's performance?
Yeah.
Okay.
There is going to be a Ford-approved app store.
Huh. My
thoughts must have got ahead of my fingers.
Well, no, but that's all right. It's a good pause because...
There's going to be a Ford-approved app store, which will let you download the apps to your smartphone that will then be able to upload them to your car.
Oh, okay. Mm. So it's not like you'll be doing that in the car. They will be installed in the car.
Right. But you have to have a proximity.
The route is...
Right, it's a proximity thing to get into the car.
And that's kind of interesting because, you know, their sync system is Microsoft.
Is Windows, yeah.
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 Ford will most likely never approve apps that alter performance because of the liability issues. This will lead to third-party apps and jailbreaking your car. OpenXC is able to work with any car that supports the CAN bus protocol. Other manufacturers that have expressed an interest in the OpenXC are Toyota, Nissan, and Honda.
That's pretty
GM
cool.
GM already has done this.
Yeah.
And their toolkit's a little different.
Okay.
So, that's the news.
Well, Matt, those are some interesting news items this morning.
Yeah, very cool. So, Mary, did you find anything this week to talk about?
Yeah, I've got a couple things. One is, and this is just brief, and I was going to actually have a segment called Fedora Follies, but I decided not to because I didn't want to. I mean, only because I was going to have some fun with you, Matt, but, you know. But I never have fun with you, so. Anyway, But this one here kind of caught my eye, and I didn't know whether it was just a diversion because of the, you know, some of the little issues and, you know, Alan Cox's comment, blah, blah, blah. But it is at Fedora 19, which right now is currently scheduled for May.
Well, it's tentative, but.
Yeah, no, right. That's why I said currently scheduled. Let me put my air quotes out there. Currently scheduled.
Currently not scheduled.
Oh.
If you go and read their page.
Okay.
It says it's not scheduled, but hey, we'll put them on May.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they don't have a schedule. But anyway, they may, the FreeBSD kernel may come as an option for Fedora 19. And I think that, I want to say Arch. Didn't Arch, I believe that, ArchBSD is out there too. Where you can go ahead and install Arch, but instead of the Linux kernel, you're going to install the BSD, FreeBSD kernel. Right. So anyway, and I think
I don't understand that.
Well, here's why they did it.
What's the advantage?
Yeah,
let me tell you.
I understand BSD and FreeBSD, and like you can install FreeBSD with KDE. So what's different than installing like FreeBSD with KDE and installing the Fedora FreeBSD? I mean, I don't get it, and I don't understand why they're.
Well, what I read as far as why making or using the the FreeBSD kernel. It's almost like my Linux BS DOS. Linux BSD OS. But anyway, is because of the ZFS. I guess that that file system?
Right.
Yeah. And so apparently the fact that it is in that kernel and is...
But ZFS takes so much RAM that no one is running it.
Okay. I was not aware of that.
On a not high-performance system with tons of RAM. Because the deduplication in ZFS is so RAM intensive.
Okay. I didn't read that, but, cause I was trying to figure out why would someone do this? But that was one of the reasons. So if RAM is not an issue, then, and they want to get the benefits of ZFS.
I just don't understand why you wouldn't just run FreeBSD. Or if you're using it as a desktop, why you wouldn't run one of the desktop BSDs like Dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand why.
Well, maybe they want some of the conveniences here in Fedora. I'm not sure what those are these days, but
and how they would translate to BSD.
Kidding. Yeah,
because a lot of the times the configuration tools are all specific to mm-hmm. Linux.
So yeah, I know, and so that's why
I don't get it.
Yeah, so that's I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. I wouldn't be adverse to trying it. I thought, oh, you know, Arch. Of course, I got so many things I'm supposed to be trying that I have done nothing on that. I won't even talk about those. The next thing I've got is, this one is from is my tinfoil hat on straight department.
All right.
And this is more of a, you know, it's not a Linux thing per se, but if you're using an Android phone, that's my tie-in. If you're out there shopping at the mall, we know that, Linux geeks are always out there at the mall. Yeah. Retailers can now track you across the mall via your wireless connection on your phone. And they do that, you know, assuming that your wireless connection is on, that you've got that activated. They do that by using your MAC address. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, so they could track how shoppers migrate, I'll say, through the mall and where they stop and what they do. Well, not what they do, but where they stop, that type of thing.
So they'll see, like, that I go from the food court to Starbucks.
Back to the food court.
And then not enter any other store.
Yeah, they would see that. Okay. And so here's the thing is that unless they tie that into some other demographic factor, I mean, they probably can derive some value from that, but, you know, it seems to me that if they knew more about you.
Well, can they trace that MAC address back to phone, which traces back to carrier? Or,
who knows? See, that's the thing.
That's one of the reasons I keep the Wi-Fi turned off on my phone.
Yeah. I keep it on at home, but I usually keep it off. But you're right. Because it also takes extra juice. The next thing I've got here is BusyBox 1.21.0 was released. Now, you're probably wondering why I'm talking about BusyBox. Well, if you're like me, your encounter with BusyBox is usually at the end of a bad experience involving some part of the boot process.
Yeah.
So in BusyBox, and then I forget about it. As soon as I see that, I think, oh, I'm screwed, and I'm gonna go back and fix something else because I didn't understand BusyBox. So when BusyBox announced the release of its first unstable release of of the year, and that's 1.21. And I kind of laugh with the word unstable and busy box in the same sentence. That was kind of funny. It caught my eye. What busy box is, and I have, do you use it, Matt, at all? It's a set of tools.
It's the Core GNU tools made in a lightweight single program fashion.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's all of it.
And so if you're familiar with those tools, and again, I think you can press, was it --help or something to get the list of tools that are available. Is that what it is? Yeah. I've never done it. Okay. You'll get a list, and then from there you can, if you're familiar with them, you can get yourself out of the trouble you're in.
It's all the core tools. It's LS.
Well, a lot of the embedded systems like TVs and routers and stuff have that, right?
That's all they have on it for their tool set.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, but I looked it up, and I'll have a link to this article on the show notes, but I thought it was kind of, I enjoyed reading it, believe it or not, because now when I look at BusyBox, I'll look at it a little bit differently. Maybe I'll try one of those tools to see if I can get myself out of the trouble I'm in. But anyway, yeah, so that was this past week. Another thing caught my eye, BitTorrent launches private and secure Dropbox alternative. Now, and that, there's a link to this story in the show notes. What they're going to be doing is you're using the torrent protocol, the BitTorrent protocol, you're going to be able to then sync your files just like you do in Dropbox, except there's going to be no central spot where they're located. It's just going to be between computers.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so if all your computers are in your house and it burns and they melt, then you're kind of SOL, but I believe it's encrypted and all of that. Hmm. So it's, you know, again, no central repository, but it will allow you to crypt between your various devices.
Peer-to-peer syncing?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Encrypted syncing, yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. I wanted to share that. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that I thought it was up here. I think the OwnCloud client, that's another kind of a cloud-based share syncing app. They just released a new client this past week for their Linux client.
Yeah, I really like OwnCloud. That's cool.
Yeah, you run it here at your house?
I did for a while, but I'm not now. It's
not
just
cool enough to keep it on. No.
The amount of files and the size of files I wanted to sync was too much for the place I was syncing into, so I stopped doing that.
Oh, okay.
I need to sync about a terabyte and a half, and decided not to do that.
In one chunk or incrementally?
No, that's the amount of data. And then, so I have a lot of movie projects and stuff that I want synced, and anyway, so to sync just parts of that, I get confused on what's synced and what's not, and so I decided just to do it by hand.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, so just wanted to mention that. Also, I've got my KDE corner this week. I've got a few things. There was a very important update. I believe it was a security update for Calligra 2.4 and 2.5. That was released. Actually, it's two major bugs. I said security. I think that was a mistake. I think it was. I'll know when I read it. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, I wanted to mention that for anyone who uses Calligra. Matt and I were determining.
Who uses it?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what they do. If you haven't looked at the Calligra interface recently, they have their tools off to the side. Instead of stretching the tools across the top of your screen, they've got them off to the right side, which is kind of nice because when you think about these particular, you know, 16 by 9 or whatever the aspect ratio is.
I have much more real estate left to right than I do top to bottom.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think that is innovative, although they probably got that from, you remember, was it Lotus Symphony, IBM's free? I think IBM was one of the first vendors to pioneer that as far as a word processing interface and keeping it off to the right side.
Yeah, I agree. Even in 4x3, your paper is still going to be, your paper view is still thinner than.
It's still portrait versus landscape.
Right. So you're still good with having on tools on the sides of the top.
Yeah.
So it does make more sense to me.
Mm-hmm. It does. So anyway, I did install Calligra because I ran into a problem with LibreOffice last week.
KDE comes with it when you install KDE, don't you get Calligra?
I don't think it does. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. When you install KDE, I don't install KDE. KDE is already installed in my distro, and my distro comes with LibreOffice, so, yeah. But I think if you install KDE.
Because I installed the KDE version of Fedora, and when I did that, I had to go out and get LibreOffice, but
okay.
Caligra was already there.
Which you promptly uninstalled.
No, I left it there.
Okay.
I've got them both.
All right. But anyway, I wanted to mention that. The KDE Tea Time, the KDE developers video podcast was released yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I kind of enjoyed this one because they were talking about users reporting bugs and what annoys them about how users do that and this type of thing. And, well, you know, when you say something like, it's not working.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very big.
Yeah. Think about it logically. You want to set of steps to replicate. How could it be replicated? Here's what I was doing, the steps I took, that type of thing. And then also reporting bugs in the wrong place. So you're in somebody's blog and you say, hey, blah, 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 this is not working or something like that.
Oh, right.
There's a process for doing it.
Don't they have a bug reporting tool now or a program? So it pulls all the debug information right away and then.
Yes. And then, then you can supply some additional information. My only knock on that, though, is that there's not enough character space for it. I run out. Maybe I'm too wordy. I don't know. But anyway, the last thing I want to mention is that, a few weeks ago, I said that Case Green, and I think this is Alex Fiestas, he's actually one of the developers on the video blog. He is the maintainer, at least the developer, working on Case Green for the multi-monitor.
Yeah.
Application. They just released 0.1 alpha yesterday. So that was released yesterday. He posted it out on his blog. There's a little video there to show you where things are at this point in time. A couple good things about it. I mean, they're just buttons that you just can click and it'll allow you to do, various setting changes. The clone one though, when you're going to kind of do a kind of not a mirror image, but a clone of your other monitor, you have to drag the monitor and put it on top of the other one.
Uh-huh.
And that seems a little kludgy to me. It seems to me that you could have a little button that you could click and that you would just then go into mirror mode.
Right.
Not mirror mode, but clone mode, whatever. But anyway, there's a link to that, to his blog posting in the show notes. And I think that's all I've got for my news.
Cool. So with the KDE, is that Razer QT, is that like the back end or is that another desktop manager?
It's another desktop manager that it uses, the QT toolkit like KDE does. And so there's going to be some similarities there. It's sort of, I call it sort of a stripped down version of KDE.
Okay. Because Ken Fallon was asking about it. I haven't tried it yet. Matt said he tried it, but he didn't like it.
What?
Razer QT?
I reviewed it a year ago, and I didn't care for it.
Too hard to use.
Yeah, I reviewed it a year ago, and it... almost a year ago, I think. It was, it was just not pleasant.
Not user-friendly or intuitive or any good at all.
I think they've gotten better at it. Maybe what I'll do is find a distro that uses it.
Maybe I'll give it another try. But.
So, oh, yeah, look what happened with KDE.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then, so that's all my news. I've got conventions, but we can do that after you do yours, Tony. If you want.
Says it has improved. It rocks.
What's that? Razer QT?
Yeah,
exactly. He's right because a year ago it was, ooh.
It was unusable. That's the last time I tried it too, so maybe I'll give it another shot.
All right.
I didn't find any specific articles to talk about this week, but I do remember hearing something, but now I can't remember what they were.
And there we go.
That's happened for like the last 3 weeks.
Well, let
it'd
me
be
know.
Monday. That's I'm like,
you,
oh, I should
write
about
it
that.
Down.
Right.
Yeah, write it down. Well, I can certainly pop into the convention scene for February if you like.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so here we are.
Hey, Mary. What's going on with the conventions in February?
well, Matt, I'll tell you. all right, February 2013 Linux convention scene. First of all, on February, and again, these are not in date order. These are just in the order that I dropped them into this sheet. So the important thing is they're here.
Okay.
All right. The first one we've got, February 2nd and 3rd, 2013, in Brussels, Belgium, a very nice city I've been to, is FOSDEM. Now, FOSDEM is a free event that offers open source communities a place to meet, share ideas, collaborate. It's renowned for being highly developer-oriented and brings together 5,000-plus geeks from all over the world. No registration is necessary. Wow. That sounds like a fun place to go. All right. On February 22nd through the 24th, 2013, out in
LA. Next year, we'll have an SMLR trip.
Oh, you know, we should. I'm game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to. I really wanted to go, but,
We got to do something like that. All right. Next up, we've got Scale, which is the Southern California Linux Exhibition.
Yeah.
And Expo. And that is February 22nd through 24th, 2013 out in LA. I got a link to that. And of course, that's just all things Linux. You know, very, very cool, event. February, 18th through the 19th and 20th to the 22nd, we've got back-to-back, Android Builder Summit and the Embedded Linux Conference. Those are two back-to-back conferences at the same hotel, the same city. Well, obviously, if it's in the same hotel, it must be in the same city. That's at the Park 55 Hotel in Los Angeles, California. So that's a place for OEMs and their device manufacturers and integrators, custom builders, et cetera, all get together and, meet, talk, sessions, discussions, presentations, et cetera.
Get naked, dance in the streets.
Perhaps. There's enough alcohol involved. The next one is Fast 13, and that's February 12th through the 15th, 2013, out at the Fairmount in San Jose, California. Now, Fast is a conference on file system technology. And one session, I went out there, took a look at the sessions because I was kind of curious about that. One of the sessions is a study of the Linux file system evolution, which I think would be kind of interesting. Well, myself.
From EXT2 to EXT3, yeah, EXT4.
And then the other ones, we've got
ButterFS, Riser.
Yeah, Riser and all that. So anyway, but that's a kind of a broader conference because it's also other file systems that are outside of the Linux set. And then finally, we've got BrainShare 2013. That's February 3rd through the 7th.
Not really Linux, but go ahead.
Well, it did say SUSE in it, so that's why I included it. It's out in Salt Lake City, Utah. Yeah, you're right. It's the Novell's BrainShare. You'll find technical.
In that great, steaming, wonderful land of tourist ability, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you, there's a great Salt Lake there.
There is, and there's also the Mormon Tabernacle and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, but.
Yeah. But they weren't singing when I was out there. But anyway, you'll find technical sessions and demos on products from Novell like SUSE, NetIQ, et cetera. But anyway, I just wanted to mention because SUSE's there, and that's, from what I understand, that's a Linux distro.
off topic, though, did you know that the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is the largest all-volunteer choir in the world?
I did not know that.
I didn't know it was in the world, but I did know it was very large. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, no one, not even the director, gets paid.
Hmm.
Well, that's dedication and passion. Well, look at us. We don't get paid.
Yeah.
And it shows.
And we're here every Sunday morning.
I know. Every time I get in my car, I drive 40 minutes, I think. Oh, my God.
I know. It's so hard to roll out of my bed and walk downstairs.
Yeah. Shut up, Tony. Shut up.
We'll move to the studio to Mary's house.
Right.
Well, then you got to come into Detroit. The police had shut down Livernois, the main street by me.
Why?
I don't know. There was a cop car crosswise, and I'm not sure what was going on. There was a cop car with the lights on. I'm sure I'll find out when I go home.
It might have been a fire.
Right.
I didn't see any fire trucks.
Really?
Yeah. I hope everything was okay.
Probably a situation.
Yeah. Could be. Or drive by.
Could be at 5:40 in the morning.
Yeah.
So anyway, Yeah. That's my news.
That's it.
And conventions.
Right. Yeah, cool. Talking about conventions, it's not for February, but in March is the Northeast Linux Fest. That's the one in at Harvard.
Yeah, Nadu. Cambridge. Jonathan Nadu.
Yeah. Yep, so that's pretty cool. I'd like to go out to that one.
Jonathan Nadu, who is blind.
And sonar.
Does the sonar distribution, which is for...
sight-impaired folks.
Well, all mm-hmm. impaired people. Mm-hmm. It's whether you're deaf or whether you're blind.
Yeah, that's cool. I know a lot of people on HPR, they're talking about getting together to go to that. What else?
Kids are laughing about that comment.
There's a lot of podcasters are out on the East Seaboard. Yeah, so that'd be... I know they're all talking about going, yeah, so I'd love to go with
them. When is it?
It's March 16th, 17th.
Let's go. Oh, St. Patty's Day.
I can't
go. Oh, in Boston, then St. Patty's Day. Oh, my gosh. The beer will be flowing.
It's in Harvard. So Harvard Square. And you know, Boston has a great, great subway system. So it's real easy to stay, like, outside of town. Like, the when we used to go pretty regularly, we would stay at the end of, like, the Red Line. And then we'd have to walk maybe 5 minutes up over a bridge to our hotel. And it was really inexpensive.
Convenient, yeah.
Really inexpensive. And then, bam, you just walk 5 minutes, you're on the Red Line, then, bam, you're downtown. So.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds convenient. Okay. So, we are...
Yeah, Ken wants us to mail him his ticket.
All right, Matt's getting on that right now.
Yeah. Look for it in the mail, Ken.
Okay, so what do we have up next here?
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Is it alive? Or is it a Linux command?
Oh.
During this segment.
What if it's alive and the Linux command.
Like less. During this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. Every other week, I twist the concept for our show and challenge them to decide whether a named entity is a Linux distro or something else. This week is Twist Week, and I challenge Matt and Tony, and I tell you, it took me a while to be able to write this correctly so I could convey it to you two. And that's not a testament to your ability to comprehend. It was my ability to get it on paper right. To decide whether the named entity is a Linux distro or a Linux command. As is customary during Twist Week, extra credit will be given if, after you correctly identify whether it's a distro or a command, what that command does, or if the distro is dead or alive.
This is kind of a twist on our listener feedback, huh?
Yeah. But the funny thing is, and I was already going down that path, so when that came in, I thought, this is perfect, right, and I'll just take it. So, okay. So what I'm going to do is I am going to read the term, and then I'm going to attach the word Linux at the end. So, you know, not to throw you off, I'm just going to say that. Okay. Oh, no, never mind. I won't say that.
You can. Matt, I don't care.
No, Matt looked at me kind of strangely.
I just didn't.
And then I realized,
why?
Well, that just sounded dumb. All right. Okay, here's the first one. Slab top.
Distro. Dead.
Yeah, distro dead.
Command.
Ah.
Oh.
And Matt, I am so disappointed in you. It displays detailed kernel slab cache information in real time.
Slab cache. Who reads the slab cache?
Nobody. Kernel developers.
No, they don't. They read the dump.
All right. So anyway, are you guys 0-0? You're tied. All right. The next one is EXE.
EXE. Well, that's not a command. I'm going to go with distro and dead.
I'm going to go with distro and alive.
EXE Linux is a Debian GNU Linux system.
Yeah.
So I think you get
Tony
two.
He takes a 1 point lead.
Yeah, he does. He's got 2-1. So
wait.
It's out of England.
Yeah,
because it was zero. He said distro and he said dead. So it's that's right. So that's very good, you guys. All right. So we're going on to the next one. Alt.
Alt.
Distro. Dead.
Command, and I don't know what it does.
Alt Linux is
an
easy to install and use universal operating system for home and office workstations.
So it's 3-1.
It's dead. I mean, did I say
it's alive? You said it was alive.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry, it is alive.
And I said dead.
That's what it was. Thanks for helping me out there. I got a lot of stuff to keep track of here.
3-1.
So you get one, and Matt gets zero.
Yes.
I think the worm has turned here. All right, the next one is ARC.
ARC.
That's a command, and it's for archiving.
I'm going to say both and alive. It's a command, and it's a distro.
It can't be both. You got to pick one.
Yeah, it's not like I said...
Well, you said less.
Yeah.
That would be an example.
She was making a joke.
I was making a joke.
All right.
She's not going to have any that are like less.
because Mary is feverishly Googling, I'm going to say she thinks it's a Linux distro. And it's a lie.
I was looking at the Linux commands because I was thinking it's a, let me read you what it is. Alt Linux 4.1 desktop.
No, you're on to Arc.
Arc.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking, okay. Arc Linux was a Linux distribution designed especially for desktop use. Now, I got a little worried because I didn't see it, but then when you said it was, Arch is really a, Arc, is a package. I mean, it's not listed on the command list that I have.
But it is a command. Watch.
I'm afraid. All right.
There is a manual page for Arc.
But it's not a command.
KDE archiving tool.
KDE archiving tool, but that's not a Linux command. It's a command.
Let me explain. And it does something.
That's because it's a utility that's installed. We're talking about Linux commands versus users.
No, like the built-in commands.
Yeah, built-in commands versus. See, if you didn't have that package installed,
that was not clear. Was not clear at the beginning because I knew that Arc was.
All right, gentlemen. Let me tell you, the final arbiter of the Linux commands is from OReillyNet, from their list of Linux commands, and I've got a link to it, and it's not there.
I have the man page right here.
I don't have the man page on my computer, so it
must
not be
installed. You doink.
So you have to install
See,
it,
that's
huh?
Just, so it, so is it's not it a Linux command. It's a
command,
it's
or is it a program?
Exactly.
Linux. And it is a command on my command line.
I think that is just a really lame argument.
Well, I think that argument goes along with if there's one person that celebrates Christmas in a country, then that country is Christian.
Oh, yeah, Matt. Remember that argument from you? Oh, my God, Tony, that was a good one. Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny, though, I have to admit. But anyway, okay, so that was where were we? Oh my God, this is the longest Is It Alive ever. Okay, that was under Arc Linux, right?
Ken says boo. It is a command.
He does say that?
Yes.
He says boo. He doesn't say it's a command.
Oh. So, Matt, you got zero. And Tony, what did you call it?
I called it Alive. These
oh, you get just one out of there, but you're still pulling away. Next one is called...
It was a command.
Omix.
And it was for archiving.
Omix.
I get two.
All right, the next one is Omix. A-U-M-I-X.
You should both get points for that,
I'm
Tony.
I'm going to say command.
Wait a minute, what are you saying? I'm missing what you're saying, Mary.
Omix. A-U-M-I-X.
It's a command.
You're right.
And it's for sound.
Yes, it's an audio mixer. Yep. Tool or command. You run without any, you can run it with options or without.
Huh.
And it's
but it's an installed thing. It's not part of the basic Linux.
You can.
It's not a core command.
It's listed on the, my
not
reference.
A core command.
All right. Pinky.
We should both get points for Arc.
You do. I'm going to, you're both getting points for the other one there.
For Arc.
Yeah, I'm getting Tony. Right. Tony's getting one.
I knew this was going to be a difficult Is It Alive. I just
only because
it.
You used Arc, which is a Linux command.
I knew what it was for. I forgot I had to tell it. Say
all
it.
Right.
All right.
So what? You didn't say it.
That's right.
The next one. The next one is Pinky.
Oh no, Pinky. He says Boo Matt.
Oh, Boo Matt. Thank you very much.
Pinky.
Next one is Pinky.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what about Omix? Huh? Omix? Weigh in on that one, will you, Ken?
But Omix is not distro specific.
It's part of the ALSA package. If you don't have ALSA installed, you don't have Omix.
I disagree with that. Did you look that up?
No, there's the ALSA mixer, and then there's the A
sound.
You're
talking about ALSA mixer. See, Matt, conviction convinces. Matt's
putting right.
that on us. I'll bet you $5.
I'm not betting.
I want to get that $5 I lost 2 weeks ago. All right. Okay, well, there we go. Let me just...
We were at Pinky. We didn't answer.
Yeah, we have Pinky. That's right.
Pinky?
Pinky.
Pinky is a distribution, and it's all dead.
Right. I'm going to go with distro and Alive.
It's a Linux command. Oh. Pinky is print user information. Think about it. It's a lightweight finger. Pinky, get it? Program that has both long and short formats. If no users are specified, prints information for all logged in users. So it's a command. Both you guys got zero. Tony, I believe that you won this, this particular episode.
Under protest.
All right. By the way, too, I was going to mention, one thing I didn't mention, and, I thought it was
sure. Ken says AllMix is not a Linux command. Thank you very much,
is
Ken.
It, how do you spell it? Is it A-L-M-I-X?
Let me go back to, yeah, it's A-U-M-I-X.
A-U.
Is it part of the GNU tools?
No, because then it would be a command.
All right. I'm looking here at the,
I do not have a manual entry for AllMix, which means it's not part of the basic Linux command set.
This directory of Linux commands is from Linux in a Nutshell. This is from O'ReillyNet. That's where I got it. So, okay, I mean, that could very well be the case. Tony's.
Arc. Oh my god, Tony's, Arc is a command.
Tony still won.
Yeah, even if we give you those 2 points back.
Yeah. Alright, so, join us next week for an undoubtedly less controversial edition of Is It Alive? I knew we were gonna have problems. That's why I was trying to write this out and trying to do it. Hey, and by the way, you guys had been making, you know, kind of rattling around about taking this over and doing it one
I
week.
I have never been rattling around.
Tony, were you gonna?
I had been saying that.
But he's quickly retreating. Yeah. All right. So there you have it, guys. Okay.
All right, cool.
Now we're on
Ken
to.
Ken says he loves this part of the show. You know, most of our listener feedback about this says that this is a very favorite part of the show.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun. I mean, it's fun to do.
Mary came up with this idea. We had been kicking around saying, we got to do something like this, but we couldn't figure it out, Matt and I. Right. Yeah. And then when Mary comes in, she gets it figured out, yeah. And that's people's favorite part.
Because, you know, Mary is the brains of this operation.
No, I think the three of us have, I think we complement each other. That's okay. With
I
an
think
E.
You're the brains.
I think we complement each other really well because you guys both know, you know more about the behind the scenes command line stuff than I do. But I've got a little creativity thing. I mean, you guys are creative too, but I think it's just we all work together pretty well.
I don't know. I think you're the brains.
Right. It's getting to be a love fest. We got to cut that out.
You're the brains. Tony's the production guy, and I'm just the opinionated ass.
Yeah, you know, I will go along with that.
Yeah,
I will
agree.
Go along with that. All right. No, I agree with some of your stuff, Matt. So, okay. So now we're on to.
Grudgingly.
Yeah, but then someday I call you out, though.
Right.
On some. That I think you're making it up.
Yeah.
Well, I don't ever make anything up. However, my sources may be questionable.
Okay.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140. We have a lot this week. Yeah.
Yep. I think we start off with Door. Commenting about flat files, right?
Yes, that was
or fixed width.
I don't have that one because it was in my regular mail, which I don't have open.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
somebody that has it's going to have to say it.
Yeah, I have it open. He says that the fixed width databases suck. So suck.
See, I agree. They're very inefficient use of space.
Right, and I would consider Dora as an expert in this topic, because especially not just because he's a good person, knows a lot. But because his profession is database specialist.
Right. That's what his title is.
I know.
Yeah.
He rocks because he's that, I tell you. Well, for a number of reasons, but.
So there's, he says it's fixed width and is it by tab?
It's for a fixed width font and each field says it's so many characters wide.
So many columns wide. Yeah.
So it's 20 characters, 20 characters, 20 characters, 20 characters. Just saying, it may
not
be.
And that field takes up 20 characters, whether the content is 3 characters or 20.
Right. And it's for dealing with old line printers that mm-hmm. had fixed width fonts.
Oh, right.
So that they could fit it all on one page.
Yeah. Man, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's why it's just a hassle to deal with, where the limited files are just so much easier.
Because back in the day, your only option was to print a report.
Right. Okay. So, but he says you can go through and add in a delimiter using, he suggested, one way to do is Note++ or some other app that does that.
Well, Notepad++ only works in Windows, so
right.
that won't be used, but.
Yeah.
So what did you end up doing with the Mary?
Well, I first of all split it, and because I couldn't open it otherwise, it was too big.
Well, Ken's feedback this week actually deals with that.
Yeah. And I'll let you talk about that. Okay. So what I did when I used it is I split it, and then I opened up each individual section, and I believe that I opened it up in Calc or whatever program I was using, right. And then converted it that way. And then once I converted it, I could then load it.
CSV,
and then I could load it into MySQL. And maybe MySQL lets me do it that way from the get-go, but I just decided. My way's a little kludgy, but I was familiar with it.
The problem you have with putting it directly into MySQL is that your MySQL database lives where, Germany?
In the cloud.
Yeah, probably Germany because it's one-to-one.
Okay.
One-on-one. Uh-huh. And you're trying to upload a huge file through that pipe, therein lies the rub.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I'm sure
it's the file size as opposed to
that. Yeah, because the first time I tried it, I ran into that problem, and then I had to scale back. That's why I had to split it, and I had to do blah, blah, blah. So
I think that your problem is more the fact of the file size as opposed to the fixed width.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, Ken Fallon says that Note++ works fine in Wine.
Yes. Yuck.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You forgot to add the yuck at the end.
No, we didn't. You did. Okay, and then what else we got here? I think on the 21st, we got something from...
Scott?
Yep.
Oh, except he says at the end of his post, he says... Scott, don't say my name.
That's right. That's what we're saying.
So it's Scott, don't say my name.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. That's all we're saying. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so...
I'm not seeing that one. Because it's a random person? That
It's in his signature.
Came to the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
How he agrees with you and sometimes doesn't agree with you.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, Rennie's
wrote him before I've said his whole name.
And
we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. So we're only saying first names. Okay. All right. Then our next one, I think, also was on Monday.
He wrote in because he's torn because he's liberal and finds himself very close alignment with Mary and Tony, even though we avoid the political stuff for the most part.
Well, I think it's easier that way.
Yeah.
Because we're never going to change.
But he's a big Fedora fan.
Yeah.
So
it's all right in your book.
Yeah. Everybody's all right in my book.
Unless
that. Unless you have differing views and in discussion with differing viewpoints, you never grow. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's it.
That's right.
Sure.
I was going to make some funny comment, but I won't. But anyway, we'll move on to the next item. And this was from Louie. And he enjoys the podcast. And actually, he talked about that your work stories, they all seem to be related to rsync, which he likes your work stories. But one of his comments, too, is about the game.
Oh,
is it alive? And maybe we should use commands or a distro. And actually, it's funny when I read that, I chuckled because that was one of the ideas. When I got Less Linux, I debated whether I should do that review last week or hold it back and use Less as one of my,
Then it would have been both.
Right, but then I would have changed the twist a little bit because there's also Arch. There's a command called Arch. And if you type
there's
Arch.
There's also a command called Arc. You know that, Mary?
Not on my list.
I bet you if you do man arc, you'll have a man page for it. You want to bet?
Sure, I'm running KDE. You do man arc. But anyway, but Arch, what's nice about it, it's going to tell you the architecture of your hardware. So, when I typed it in, it was I686.
Did you get a man page, Tony?
No, it says no manual entry for arc.
How'd you spell arc?
ARC.
It's ARK.
All right, so anyway.
Same thing.
Oh, phew. Ooh, okay, I'm rocking now. So anyway, but that was
I got no manual entry for Omics.
Hey, I'm...
Huh. Wait, let's go back. Now, ARC, the ARC Linux, how is that spelled?
A-R-K.
Okay.
And it, yeah, I believe their last release was like in 2008, I think. So.
Anyway, alright.
Alright, we're moving on. We're moving on with the.
And just putting that again.
Give it a rest.
I had no manual entry for Omex. Go ahead.
Okay. Alright, we'll talk about that after the show. Alright, so anyway, but it was kind of fun seeing that because that was a route, one of my twists I had thought about just 2 weeks earlier, so.
Yeah.
So Louis, great minds think alike, as they say. So thanks very much for that.
You and Louis, great minds.
Yeah. And then on the 24th, we got something from Keith. And actually, I'm going to turn that one over to you. That was the initial.
Yeah, Keith initially wrote in and said that at his job, they use cacti, you know, mm-hmm. to monitor their network connection up and down. And so Keith is going to be on next week to talk to us about cacti.
Yeah, and he also does some other tools that he uses too. Is it Munin?
Yeah, he uses Munin and
SmokePin.
And I'm familiar with Munin. Uh-huh. It's a graphing tool similar to cacti, but I am not familiar. And they also use Puppet, but I'm not familiar with that smoking. Where
SmokePin?
SmokePin. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know what that is.
Well, it's similar to smoke crack. I made that up. No, I suspect that it's probably has something to do with ping.
Right, like seeing if a server or service is up.
You know, like smoke signals. It's the concept of smoke signals, and then you apply it to the ping. You apply it to the ping command.
Well, we can ask them about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're going to move on with the rest of our feed. Do we have any more?
Yeah, there's a lot more.
All right.
We have Brad Alexander had a comment about the toolbox.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Again, he's talking about Munin also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Yeah,
two different people talking about the same thing.
And I was going to say, the SMLR toolbox today was basically the game, so. You know, you can tell there's some
that there was an ARC command. Amazing. Yeah. And no AUMIX. Hmm. Go ahead.
All right.
I don't hold a grudge.
No, you don't.
He says how Salt is a competitor to Puppet and M Collective.
Right, right. But it's a latecomer to that parade. So
yeah,
everybody that's already existing on Puppet is not going to move to Salt.
No.
Salt's only chance to grow is to get new businesses that aren't using a configuration management tool.
Mm-hmm.
Already.
Right.
Yeah.
So. And if you want to know more about it, Floss Weekly did their show 191, talked about it. So it'd be a good thing to listen to. That's on the Twit Network.
Okay. Thanks, Sony.
Yeah, what else do we have?
We
router
have,
on a stick?
Ken has two different feedbacks. Router on a stick is his first one.
You want to read that one, Matt?
It's multi-homed IP addresses are common for routers on a stick, where you want to keep layer 2 on the same hardware, but keep a separation on layer 3 and above. This allows you to restrict some PCs to the internal network, forcing them to route through a firewall or a proxy, etc.
Yeah.
So what he's referring to is when we were talking 2 weeks ago about putting more than one IP address on a network card, that's one type of multi-homing.
Right. And where he's talking about layer 2 and layer 3, where layer 2 is like MAC address layering, right. So that's like running a switch. And layer 3 is IP, so that's routing stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. Cool.
Great.
So then he goes on and has more feedback for 67, which was last week's, and his big file is... He says, it pained me to hear you were solving the big data file, how you were solving the big data file, Mary. It pained him.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, it pained me, too.
He says that Excel and programs like that try and open up the entire file, whereas like a proper Unix file, we'll like VIM or whatever,
uh-huh.
is only going to open part of the file at a time.
Oh, okay.
Move the markers through the file.
Sure, sure.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why, as I think I said earlier, not earlier on this episode, but in an earlier show, is that there was a note from the state with that file saying if you try to use...
Ken says, great feedback. That guy knows his stuff.
yes, he does. But anyway, yeah, they said that if don't try to use Excel for this thing.
Yeah.
Because it won't work.
Yeah. So. Well, they also, he gives, it says tools like Awk is perfect for this task. Mm-hmm. And then he gives a link of how to use it.
Yeah, because Sed and Awk work together. And one of them, mm-hmm. one of them deals with the line this way, and the other one deals with the file this way. And,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and I always forget which is which. But yeah. And since he's saying awk, I'm assuming awk works with the...
Oh, horizontally?
Yeah. Well,
by this way. For anybody replace... listening, you're talking
oh, yeah.
this way.
you can't really see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But,
that's all
yeah.
right. So.
It deals with... One deals with...
Yeah. So one deals with...
With columns and the other one deals uh-huh. with rows.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I get it.
I don't know. Something going on there. anyway, but... yes, and we do have a phone feedback line. Not a helpline like I called it last episode. It is 313-626-9140.
Yeah. All right.
I got it right the second time.
I had to look it up and read it as you were saying it.
I know. I had the six flipped upside down. So, anyway.
That's okay. cool.
And I guess that's all for our feedback?
That's it.
I think
that's all I have.
All right.
Featured music of the week.
And Mary has a suggestion. Do you want to read it?
No, because I closed it. I thought I just gave it to you. Why don't you read it?
Oh, did you email it to me?
No, I didn't. Not yet.
It was a...
Fail. We have a major fail here.
Fail. Fail.
It was... Was it the Penguin in the Grindhouse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Penguin in the something.
Yeah.
Here, I'll look it up.
Okay. Okay, oh, so it is...
Yeah, so it's... the band is called Penguin Grindcore Club.
That's right.
Oh.
All right, so, all right, well, that's good. Let's take a listen.
This is Klein Tank After Titanic. Titanic.
There we go. Let's wrap this.
Yeah. All right.
Fiasco.
Oh, show.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Let's wrap this baby up. All right.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 68, Untitled.
Fed up.
Untitled.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week. Got one flipper and one arm. It's
Matt.
Sorry. You might want to edit that out, Tony.
I don't know. He's not writing anything down.
Or leave it in or throw it in the outtakes. Whatever you want to do with it. I don't really care.
For anyone who was offended, I apologize.
Yeah, I didn't mean to offend anyone. It was all meant for humor and good fun.
And the song is Nula Siskinzusk.
The what?
I have no clue how to say it.
It starts with a K?
And
is it the first one?
It's their most popular one.
So oh, okay.
It's NULLACHTFUFFZEHNINTRO.
What?
TIEIO.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and Ken says, somebody call 911. Not necessary, Ken. I have recovered.
That's funny. We'll
slice
some of that out just to tighten it up a little, but... Or if we can just have pithy comments, and I'm not talking with a lisp. while Tony quickly. All right.
What is going on?
I don't know, but I'm afraid he's going to have a stroke. All right. All right.
All right, Matt.
Everyone, wow. I think every once a quarter. All right, calm down. Oh my God! Wow. Oh. I was gonna wheel out the oxygen there, but anyway.